Sick Boy Podcast is a health and comedy show about what it's like to be sick. Wait, is that right? How can illness be funny?
You'd be surprised.
Okay. Sick Boy is hosted by
me, Brian Stever.
And me, Taylor McGilvery.
And myself, Jeremy Saunders.
Come on in and join us to melt your heart, learn something fascinating, and bust a belly laugh. Trust us, you'll be glad you did.
You can find Sick Boy on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your pods.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hi, I'm Hillary McBride. This is Other People's Problems. Before we start, I want to tell you this session is a little unusual. My client Louise is in the hospital. We're meeting over video online, and the audio is throttled by the hospital Wi-Fi. Louise had a really hard weekend. She was put under sedation and on a feeding tube. We'll talk more about that, but for now, it'll be easiest to hear this session if you listen on headphones in a quiet space, and I'll pop in and clarify spots that are especially hard to understand.
I was sedated over the weekend and just given the tube beads just because, like, I couldn't cope with much anymore. I was nervous about that, like, going into it, but it actually ended up being overall a positive thing, because I think I just needed the mental break. So I felt more like rejuvenated yesterday, and I guess clarity of thought, like I could think of it better.
Wow.
But then I got a swab back saying I'm still positive for COVID. So I can't go to eating disorders still. So I'm stuck here. Whew.
This is a session with my client, Louise. When I first got on this call with Louise, one of the things that I noticed is that she sounds sluggish, like she's tired, like she's been through a lot. And I'm not sure if you caught it off the top, but she let us know that she had been sedated over the weekend in order to take her feeds. What that means is that she's hooked up to a feeding tube and it's constantly giving her nutrition. Louise was really struggling with her eating disorder and was formed, which meant that she was mandated to go into the hospital to get treatment. Because things were so severe at that moment, she had to go into the hospital, even though there was no space in the eating disorder treatment facility that was eventually going to take her. And while she was in the hospital, she got COVID-19. Having COVID-19 meant that she couldn't actually go into the eating disorder treatment facility that was supposed to take her. At the time that I'm speaking to her, she's been in isolation for several weeks. And before that, she was in the hospital without much access to people. And so it seems like it's been months since she's been a part of her regular life.
I feel like I'm slipping into a surrender piece, but it's not the kind of surrender that I think is helpful.
More like defeat than acceptance.
It's like I'm so far into this. And so far gone, but at that same time, I know myself, and I know I've done this before, and I know my eating disorder will come back with a vengeance once it kind of wakes up again, and that scares me. And I feel like I've gone quite numb.
You mentioned that scares you. Can you tell me a little bit about that fear?
Just because when I know when I wake up, it will be all hell breaks. Because, like, I will get mad. I will get mad at them that they did this to me and it wasn't in my control.
Here, she says, I know when I wake up, all hell will break loose. I'll get mad at them that they did this to me and it wasn't in my control.
And it wasn't my decision, because nothing is my decision right now.
Yeah.
Our doctor does not negotiate anything. He's very set in his ways. So And I'm really struggling right now because, just like staying the weight gain, but not knowing how to deal with it.
You said struggle with the weight gain. In the past, when you've described that, it sounded like shame. In the past, when you've described it, it sounded like there's also times that feels like panic. I'm wondering, when you think about your body returning to health, what comes up for you when you say you're struggling?
I enjoyed being the sick one. So for me, when people are like, you're getting your health back and you're getting your energy back, and I feel so horrible because I, in my head, I'm like, no, I like feeling like I'm at the brink of death. And I miss it. I miss it already. Mm-hmm. And not that I feel great 100% of the time yet, but obviously I'm feeling better than what I came in. So it's scary and sad to me that I already miss my sick body, which comes with that. People try to make it a good thing, and I know that's the acceptable thing. So I say, yeah, it's great, but I don't feel that.
But what you're really feeling is, it sounds like so much grief and so much fear and shame. The eating disorder up until this point has had free rein in Louise's life, taking over pretty much every part of who she is. And as soon as she gets into treatment and her body is changing just ever so slightly, it's almost like the eating disorder turns up its volume, saying, hey, you can't do this. And I'm going to double down on all of the thoughts and the behaviors that I had that got you here in the first place. You can hear this one part of her come up and say, I want this. In fact, even the part of her that's choosing sedation to get the feeding tube, that's a part of her that's saying, I know that this is the way forward. I know that I need recovery. And we hear the eating disorder part talk about all of the things that are going to happen, all of the risks when she actually starts to live in a new way. I want to jump back to what you had said a few moments ago about knowing the real you, what it must be like to feel like you're having to pretend to all of these people, be something they want you to be. I imagine that feels like a lot of pressure. I know that me not getting angry at you is not magic. It doesn't make everything disappear. But I did find myself thinking just then, if there's a deeply held core belief that there's something wrong with you, that you're flawed.
I want an answer. Like, I want to know how to stop thinking that way.
How to stop thinking which way? That you're flawed?
Yeah, that I'm flawed, or that I need to be sick. Because, like, I feel a lot of shame about that too, right? Like, for goodness sake, in my whole family, there's someone who is terminally ill. It's very close to me. And here I am getting healthier while he can't, and I wish he was sick.
Here you hear her say, for goodness sake, in my own family there's someone terminally ill, someone close to me, and here I am getting healthier while he can't, and I'm wishing I was dead. For people who aren't familiar with the eating disorder world, hearing what Louise is saying might sound shocking and totally confusing. How could a person be missing when they were so ill that they were almost dying? One of the ways that we work with the eating disorders is to think about the eating disorder as a friend and a foe. It gives us perhaps a sense of control or agency, or maybe a way to numb out all sort of sensation in our bodies. This thing that has helped her endure so much suffering on the inside. If we imagine taking that from someone, taking their coping away from them, it might make a little bit more sense. She's not necessarily missing death itself or illness itself, but how I hear it is that she's missing what it was giving her, missing what the eating disorder was doing, and in that way, also leaving her exposed to all of the suffering that's underneath.
So much shame from within me, and then other people. Because it's always, think of your dad, think of your dad. How can you do this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How can you let this happen? A lot of that was a lot of the talk before I came to the hospital, so...
And the impact of all of that shame is what? Like when the shame happens on the inside of you and when the shame happens from other people, what does it do?
Honestly, it makes the eating disorder worse. I just loathe myself even more. And I think it's a way to like shut people out. Mm. I'm not really sure. But I just...
Yeah, or punish yourself, disappear, get some control over stuff that's feeling out of control. Yeah, this reminds me of what we've talked about before, about how the eating disorder has been so helpful, with a cost for sure. It's like it's doing some pretty serious damage. But if we're not acknowledging how it's helping you, we're not really getting to the bottom of what's going on here, how it's working for you. And it sounds like, just from what you said, the eating disorder helps with shame in some way. And yet the irony is that the deeper into the eating disorder, the deeper into the eating disorder. It just seems like they're so tightly wound together.
Most of the time I can't pull them apart.
Do you think it's important to pull them apart?
I don't know if it's possible.
You can hear in what she's saying that there is really an unbelievable amount of shame that she carries on the inside. So anything that I can do to take shame away from her, how she's been, the choices she's made, and give her a good sense of insight and help her experience my compassion for her, we can slowly start to erode the strongholds that shame has in her life. And in doing so, we're giving less fuel to the eating disorder.
I heard your question. I want to come back to it because I want you to know I heard you about asking, am I deeply flawed? How do you think we go about answering that question or making sense of why it's there?
I don't know. I've always felt that way.
Do you feel like you're deeply flawed when we're together?
Like, I feel like I'm flawed, but, like, there's, like, an outlet where I can, like, talk about the flaws.
Got it. So less hiding has to happen, but still feeling that way. I'm thinking about the conversation we've had a few times when you said, like, what's wrong with me? And I really believe, just so that it's really clear, that you are not fundamentally broken or flawed. And my belief is that no matter how big or wild the eating disorder gets, that none of that changes your worth and your value. We can't fix deep, deep pain and questions about our existence and our lovability with some things on the surface. We can't make our grief go away by drinking. We can't learn that we're lovable by constantly trying to achieve. And so if the question is, am I lovable? Is there something wrong with me? Trying to be perfect on the outside will never answer some of those questions that we have on the inside about ourselves. And so we keep feeling like we're failing, which adds proof to the story that there's something wrong with us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when I look at your life, I think about just how painful it is that you carry that story around. Coming up for you as I'm saying all of that.
I feel like I know that to be true, but I'm so looking identified with the eating disorder. I feel it's all I have.
It would be so scary then to think about giving it up or it being taken from you.
Yeah, and I sit here alone in isolation, and that's exactly what's happening. And like, I can understand was like, well, yeah, like he was dying literally when he got here. So like, yeah, I know I need this to an extent, but you know, to an extent. And then the so I was like, okay, it's been 6 weeks, let's get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I can't keep doing this horrible, like a carousel of horrors, like around and around and around. Sometimes you get off, but inevitably you get back on. I don't want that to happen again.
I'm hearing so many parts of you come out the more we spend time with this, right? There's the part that is shame, and there's the part that, you know, there's the eating disorder part itself that wants to be there, and then there's the fear. And I'm also hearing woven through all of that, this part of you, I would say it's, you know, it's who you really are that is already thinking about all the things that you want on the other side of recovery and treatment.
Yeah.
What's that like when we kind of pull that piece out and I tell you that I hear you and I hear that part of you?
It reminds me that it's still there, which makes me a bit hopeful if I can pull it out.
It's fine. Okay, now, I'll be back tomorrow and I really don't have any other girls, but it was great caring for you today.
Oh, thank you so much for your help and all the advocating you've been doing.
Is that one of the nurses that's been helpful?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
You said it's starting to make you feel a little bit hopeful.
Oh, yeah.
Can we pull this part out? Mm-hmm.
It makes me feel like, okay, when you gain the weight, it's not over. This is just the physical part. But Hillary will be there to help me through the other part. That's really, really, really the most scary part.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is hell. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. It just gives me a bit of hope that there is a true me that isn't the disorder. I don't feel often.
Yeah. Well, you said 98% of the time the narrative is eating disorder. So, yeah, it's hard to pick out that 2%. It's there for sure. Going through the hospital and having a feeding tube and starting this slow journey of recovery here, it's hard. It has been overwhelming, painful for her. And yet what you can hear her talking about is how there is actually something perhaps even harder coming. When she has been restored physically enough that she's allowed to be released from the hospital, in some ways that's when the real work begins. Beginning life, learning to engage with normal rhythms of life, learning how to eat and feed herself, take care of herself, and get out of the spiral and the cycle that the eating disorder has wound so tightly inside of her.
What if someone you love asks you to help them die? What would you say? This is the powerful question at the heart of The Ultimate Choice. The series follows the journey of Michael and his wife Anne as they grapple with his request to choose the way he wants to die. I'm Rob Cribb, and through their story, I learned a lot about my own family. I hope the show is a way to start conversations many of us want to have, but rarely do. The Ultimate Choice is out now.
When you talk about hope and we spend a little bit of time with it, do you notice what it feels like?
I feel a bit lighter.
Yeah, not so weighed down, maybe.
Yeah. We were talking about grief the other day. To me, it feels like a big, thick wall. Like a really thick wall. Gray shawl draped over my shoulders. And it's really, like, heavy. And then when we talk about the hope, it's kind of like it comes off a little bit. Or at least a layer of it comes off. And then I feel a bit more, a bit lighter. I'm trying to think of a word. It's not excitement, but it's like almost like I'm looking forward to a day where that's a possibility, I guess.
Oh, wow.
Which is a big deal because normally I want to end it off right now. it's just so painful.
Yeah, hope is really different than thinking about suicide.
Yeah. For some reason, there's always this little flicker of hope in me. And I don't know why, because I never should have died many times now, but that flicker is still there.
You know, what's really popping out to me about what you just said is where we started our appointment, where you were saying, I feel safe enough to tell you that I'm scared about letting the eating disorder go because I kind of like being sick. And then here we are at the end and you're saying, I'm feeling safe enough that I can connect to the hope. And it seems to me like there's something about that safety of knowing there's not going to be shame or judgment that is allowing all sorts of things to come to the surface, including who you really are. And yet there's something about when we are in this connection together where it seems like it could be survivable, it could be manageable, like you wouldn't have to do all of those hard things alone. And somehow, because of that, there's hope there.
Yeah.
I just wanted to point out that the safety makes room for the hard things and the beautiful things. Sometimes when we are together, we end our time by me talking directly to the eating disorder part and to the other part of you. Would that feel helpful today too? Okay. So this is me talking to the eating disorder. Thank you for how you've come to help manage how painful life has been. In fact, you've worked so hard, so hard that you might have even done more than you needed to. And in taking away the pain, took away lots of other parts of her too. And there's another part that can take it from here, that has hope, that knows how to ask for help and feel the hard things. That part is going to be much better off making some of the big choices from here on out. We're going to ask you to give her a bit of room. What happens for you when I say that? What do you notice inside?
My initial reaction is lack of confidence and feel a little flicker of that hope and empowerment.
Mm-hmm. So can I talk directly to that part? That part that's holding hope and empowerment, or what we often call who you really are? I want to say to you, I see you in there. And I'm so inspired that you are in there and that no amount of hurt could make you go away or disappear. And we want to make so much room for you to come to the surface. And life is better when you are more fully here. Can you check in with what you're noticing and feeling in your body just as we end our time together? What it's like to be you in this moment?
Very hyper aware of my body right now. And my cheeks feel huge. And trying not to look at them too much right now.
Yeah, you know, we haven't spent a ton of time talking about this specifically, but a really, really important way to rewire your brain when there has been so much focus on weight and appearance is actually to spend time noticing sensations on the inside of you. And starting to not only notice ones that are hard.
Can I bring anything before I enter the room?
But
no, I think just a bit of water.
Water, okay. And then we'll start your feed right now, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Sorry. Noticing. Hey, don't be. No, it's all part of it. Noticing sensations inside, not just evaluating the outside, but tracking with, like, remember when you were saying, like, there's some warmth, or like, I feel the heaviness, or I feel the lightness, really paying attention to sensations that way that are related to emotion,
especially paying attention to ones that feel positive or enjoyable. Because what that's going to be doing is it's going to be teaching some part of your awareness, like, oh, guess what? My body is the place where I also feel life and where I also feel connection and all of these juicy things that I want more of. It makes a lot of sense you have that anxiety. And anxiety often comes up when there's feeling and we don't know how to be with feeling. And when we started our call, you were talking about feeling really shut down because there's too much going on. It's too hard. And as we start to make it safe and we open up again, then we feel again.
I'm feeling things shift. We're having this moment of deep connection. And then all of a sudden there's this anxiety that, because the food's coming and it's going to be one of the hardest parts of her day. And our session is ending and there's a few more things that I want to get in. And it's, I just hear that in this audio, this wanting to connect and give her just one more thing to think about and work on.
I'll let you go because you're in the middle of that. But just wanted to normalize and let you know it all makes sense. And I'm going to be with you. I'll be thinking about you through your feed tonight. And if you feel lonely, you can think of me. And in that way, you can feel us together. We can be together in our minds.
So just to clarify the last little bit, when I call this hyper-focusing, that's like my cheeks right now. But I should go inward.
Yeah, that's right. Making sure that you're staying with things that happen on the inside, not evaluations of the outside. And I'll send you an email now about when we can see each other next.
Okay, that'd be great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Thanks so much.
Bye. You're welcome.
Learning to experience goodness in the body from the inside out can be a way to say, hey, the body isn't all bad, like the eating disorder is telling you. In fact, your body is where you feel connected. Your body is where you feel at peace. That lightening that you felt earlier from the shawl of grief coming off your shoulders, that was in your body too, and it had nothing to do with how you look. So we're just slowly over time trying to shift where she directs attention and to help her learn again, slowly and over time, that her body is good, that her body is a place where good things happen and where she can actually learn to be instead of just trying to get away from. I'm Hillary McBride. Other People's Problems is produced by Jody Martinson, mixed by Will Howie. TK Matunda is our associate producer. Tanya Springer is our senior producer. RF Nirani is the executive producer of CBC Podcasts.
Hi, I'm Jody Martinson, producer of Other People's Problems, and I'm here with Hillary McBride. Hillary, this was a really powerful session to listen to, and I just wanted to take the chance to ask you a few more questions about the issue of eating disorders more broadly. You struggled with an eating disorder yourself, and I was wondering what aspects of the pain Louise was feeling really resonated with you in this session, because you went through it yourself.
Yeah. I understand the experience of feeling hopeless, where as soon as the eating disorder starts to lose its grip, you kind of miss it. It's almost sick to hear that, to say that. But this thing that's worked, that's been an important part of identity, that's maybe even felt like a kind of certainty when lots of things felt uncertain, to have it leave you feels like you're grieving the loss of a friend in a way. And I also understand the huge amounts of shame she has about her body, about herself. When everybody around you is trying to say, you need to get better, and you're saying, but I don't want to, it just feels like there's something wrong with you, that everybody else wants something for you that you can't want for yourself, and in fact, you want the opposite. So I really understand what it's like on the inside for her. And because of that, and knowing what it's like to be on the other side of it, I just feel so much sadness for her in the way that I imagine people felt sadness for me when I was in the midst of my eating disorder, that there is an awareness of suffering and the inability to take it from someone when that's all you want to do.
At its worst, what did your eating disorder look like?
What are you asking?
I guess I just really want to know, I guess, where you come from, Hillary, and the depth of your suffering and what that looked like for you. And of course, you don't have to share that, but I couldn't help but think about you as I listened to this session between you and Louise and heard all your empathy.
We have a code in eating disorder treatment and recovery and kind of in this community that we don't talk about weight and we don't talk about symptoms and we don't talk about these things that on the outside the world judges as objectively, you know, worse than other kinds of things or behaviors. And in a way, we protect the variety of what eating disorders look like, that they show up in so many shapes and sizes and so many degrees of intensity or frequency. And so I want to make a really conscious effort in response to your question to not talk about some of those objective criteria. But what I will say is that when things were really at their worst for me, I can really only use a bunch of metaphors to talk about it, but it seemed almost at random that the overwhelming intensity of being alive was intolerable, and then I was already half dead. My whole life was lying to myself and other people. The amount of deception that I had to engage in to appease other people, to make them not worry so much, but then also trapping myself in even more illness, made me feel like I was playing this chess game where I was always wondering what people were thinking, in some ways never able to tell what was really going on, hoping someone would know, hoping no one would know, really not wanting anyone to take the eating disorder from me, but really feeling like I knew I was out of control and this was not the life that I wanted to live, but feeling paralyzed between all of these dynamics in such a way that life became really unlivable. And I think for me, the huge degree of shame that I had was how long it took me to let people know that I was hurting. I know now that I was suffering more than I needed to. But in the same way that you can hear in Louise, that I felt this battle of, I don't want this to be taken from me because it's actually doing something. And I don't actually know how to be with life if I don't have this a part of me. And at the same time, this is killing me. And so I think maybe to look at it as just suffering and chaos and slowly dying.
And in your own journey, how did you take your next steps? If Louise was to take some inspiration from you, what would you tell her about where you went next?
One of the things that really helped me, I would say next in my eating disorder recovery, was getting angry. And that might seem like a kind of a surprise, especially given how much I'm talking with Louise about compassion and undoing the shame. But for me, the ability to feel anger and to direct all of that intensity that was previously directed at my body, at myself, outward, at something else, all of a sudden gave me the space on the inside to feel like a kind of aliveness again, like stoking a flame in some ways, like giving flame oxygen. And it was creating this room on the inside of me that I hadn't had before. And for me, the anger was really directed at like there's no other way to say it, like patriarchal constructs of women's bodies. When we look at what culture says about what bodies are ideal and this story that all of us have been handed in Western cultures, where a thin body is somehow the ideal body and that women's bodies need to be constantly disappearing, that to be a good woman, you need to be removing yourself from the world on a bodily sense. Getting angry at that made me feel like I wasn't broken. I was actually compliant, that the eating disorder was me being obedient, not a broken person. I was doing everything that I was told to do. And so I didn't actually have to feel the shame about myself. I could actually say, wow, in some ways, I'm the canary in the coal mine. I am doing what I was told to do, and that's messed up. And if I'm going to be healthy, if I'm going to find a source of life on the inside of myself that's big enough, that's generative enough that I can push back on this kind of machine, then maybe this is the way, and maybe I can do this. So for me, the anger, The anger gave me energy, and it made me feel like I had something to resist, to push against that wasn't myself. When previously the war had been on the inside, the eating disorder, and then the part of me that wants to get better, and that was constantly in tension, it was like I could relocate all of the conflict to the space between me and cultural discourse, and I didn't have to hold that tension in myself in the same way.
Hillary, thank you. We've done a few of these episodes now where I know it's going to matter to some people in a really big way. So thank you, and thank you, Louise.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.